Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is the Omni Group software engineer, Liz Marley. Liz, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Thank you for being with me on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
As you know, I've had your boss on the show, Ken Case. It went really
sure.
Well. He was a lot of fun. So you are a software engineer, but that wasn't always true.
No, I've taken probably a bit of an unusual path to get here.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. I wanted to talk to you about that. So what got you into computers? I want to hear about how this happened, because you have an interesting story to tell. But going back in time, how did you first get into computers?
I'm not sure I could say I got into computers. I don't know that I was ever not in computers. We had a computer from as early as I can remember. The first computer that I remember in the house, which there may have been an earlier one, but I don't remember the model, but we had an Apple IIgs. And
is that the little tiny white one?
The keyboard and the CPU and the disk drive were all attached, and then the mod. I don't remember it being tiny, but, you know, I was smaller then, so maybe it was.
Okay. Yeah.
I played games with it.
I think there was an Apple II that was the, you know, the big box, the sort of beige box, and you put a monitor on top, and then there was this, I think there was this 2GS that was kind of smaller and had a built-in keyboard and had a green CRT with it. Anyway.
Definitely green CRT.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah. I played with Delta Draw, which from my friend's story sounds like it's a bit like Logo, but it was just a little cursor, no turtles. And Sticky Bear Reading and Sticky Bear Math.
How old were you?
I was probably 4 at that point.
Oh my goodness. 4?
Delta Draw was probably a little later than that, because it gets into programming a bit. But yeah, the computer was just always a thing. And my dad, it was sort of his computer, but I always felt free to do computer things. I hear from other women that, my parents bought my brother a computer or whatever, but that was never the case for me. Computers were always a thing that I could be interested in.
Did your dad tell you to just have at it, or was he protective of the computer, or did he say, here, do whatever you want with this? I know you were young.
I remember one time we got some new software. I don't think it was Photoshop, but it was something, some kind of drawing, painting program, and we got this brand new software, and he sat down to read the manual, and I just started installing it and playing around with it and figuring out whatever I could, just hands-on.
So when did you fall into the Macintosh sphere? Was that quite a bit later?
Our high school had Macs, and we had a Mac at home around the same time. So ClarisWorks and probably Mac OS 7 or 8 around then.
And that would have been around 94, 97.
Yeah. So the Mac was just what I knew. Some people have Windows computers, but I basically never used one. Then, and even when I went off to college, I took a Mac with me.
Was there something about the Mac that particularly appealed to you? I was talking to another guest the other day, and he was saying that when he saw Mac Paint on a Mac, like, his head blew off. He just couldn't believe it.
I think it's more that just felt normal, and all I ever heard about Windows was when people were frustrated and confused by it. I just wasn't interested.
So you were doing ClarisWorks on a Mac. What a cool program that was. I remember getting excited about that while doing real word processing.
Yeah. I remember we did a whole lot of stuff with databases, too. Like, what's that program? it had a databases feature in it in AppleWorks, ClarisWorks. And these days you can't do databases unless you're talking like major SQL Server kind of programmer stuff.
Yeah, I wrote an article about that about a year ago, about the death of the personal database.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's been an interesting evolution of the computers. I remember, in that article I wrote, I remember how we used to fuss with databases. You know, we'd put our wine collection or our stamp collection into a database, and we sit there for hours on end cataloging things. My wife calls it stamp collecting in a sort of a derogatory sense, because it's like, you know, you're sitting in there wasting all your time, you know, logging things when you could be doing something else. Maybe that's it. Maybe people just got tired of sitting there, you know, logging things. I don't know.
Maybe. I still would like that app to exist a little more than it does.
Yeah, and then there was a Bento database that kind of didn't make it either.
Yeah.
So there came a time then when you were off to college?
Yeah, I went to Harvey Mudd College in Claremont, California. You pretty much have to get a technical degree there. They don't really have majors for liberal arts.
Is that a college that you had kind of dreamed about or planned on going to because they were so technical and you were into computers? Or was it, what was the motivation for that particular college?
I was looking around at a few different schools. One of the big advantages of Mudd is being in Southern California. I figured I was likely to make it to class every day in February.
Mm.
I toured Notre Dame while it was snowing and realized I was going to have a lot of trouble getting out of bed.
Yeah, Notre Dame, one of my favorite schools. Yeah, follow their football team. So you majored in what at Harvey Mudd then?
I started out planning to major in engineering, but class there is all built around group projects, and I had had some rough experiences with group projects in high school. I think we all did. But so I didn't want to take that class, so I changed my major to avoid that class, which is pretty ironic because later computer science classes had group projects, and eventually I even stepped into the role of product manager here at Omni, which is really, really all about group projects.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you about that more in the second half of the show. But I wanted to ask you about, what was the problem with group projects? Was it that there was always somebody who was doing all the work and everybody else didn't? Or what was the deal?
I was often the one doing all the work. And there's just a lot of overhead, particularly when it's a very team, figuring out, okay, who's going to do what? What time of day can we meet? Mm-hmm. Just so much logistical overhead for a project that I could have done myself in the same amount of time in some cases.
You told me earlier that in your computer science career, you were programming with lots of bugs and crashes, and it was frustrating. Tell me about that.
Yeah, primarily in my data structures class in C++, it seemed like I was constantly hitting seg faults and spent far more time debugging my code than like running it. It was just all crash and explosions.
But it didn't sour you. You persevered.
Yeah. I think that might be why my first day at my first real job, they asked me, so do you want to be a developer or do you want to be a tester? And in my arrogant, fresh out of college attitude, I said, well, I already know what it is to be a developer. I have a snazzy computer science degree. So let me try out this testing thing. I can always come back and be a developer later.
Were you good at it?
I think I did a pretty good job at it. That having struggled in my computer science classes, actually, I had built up some intuition about where things tend to go wrong, and so therefore where the bugs might be hiding.
Tell me about the interaction there, because I'm curious. So this guy who thinks he's a hotshot programmer, he writes his code and he says, oh, I'm ready to ship. And the manager goes, no, we have to do QA. We have to let Liz test it. And so then you come back to him with this long list of bugs. How did that go?
It varied from one developer to another. Definitely some tact is required sometimes.
I would think so.
There's some ego on the line, but
yeah,
it seems to go really well when we remember that we're all on the same team. We all have the same goal of shipping the best possible software, and best can mean least buggy or ships before a deadline, or, you know, there's nuances to it, but if we don't know what bugs are hiding, we can't fix them. So when the developers can see testers as helping them put their best foot forward, then it can be a great partnership.
Were you ever tempted to gloss over something that was really tiny that you didn't think was worth irritating somebody about?
It's probably happened, and I can't come up with a specific instance of skipping over bugs. I do remember a feud with a developer that I filed a bug and he returned it saying it wasn't a bug. And I said, yes, it is a bug. And he said, no, it isn't.
Sounds
and
like
I
Apple.
Said, yes, it is. And, somewhere in there, it turned into, well, it's not something we can fix. And I said, well, it's still misbehavior, and we should be aware of it. And anyway.
That sounds like a classic Dilbert cartoon. Well, it's a bug, but we can't fix it. That's amazing. Was this at the Windows, the company where you're working with Windows?
Yeah, and that those 2 years confirmed my suspicions that I really belong in the Mac world. So,
and yeah. You mentioned before that the Macintosh just felt more natural to you. Windows can be an alien development environment for many, because Apple has spent so much time working on the elegance and the grace of Xcode and how you develop applications. And I've talked to so many people who do Windows development, and they just say, it's frustrating. So how long did that last?
That was about 2 years. And then I had personal reasons for wanting to move to Seattle. So I started hunting around, and, you know, I applied to Microsoft, applied to Amazon. They didn't want me. And then I tripped over this job description on Craigslist, and they were looking for a tester, and they were building Mac software, and they had an office cat, and they had free lunches, and
bingo.
This was ridiculous.
Bingo. Well, you know, I was talking the other day to another guest, and we were talking about Macintosh developers and writers and people in the Mac world, and they all seem to have cats. It's just something about the Macintosh personality that fits with cats. I haven't run across too many people or guests on the show who are into the Mac world and have an affection for dogs. I don't know what it is. I have to investigate this more. It's interesting. So you moved, and you told me that you were a little bit allergic to the weather in California.
Yeah, that's a bit of a joke on the Omni's job description. Probably use some updating.
Okay.
But Seattle weather is pretty great.
Does it rain as much as people say it does, euphemistically?
It does, but when you're a software developer, it's good to have an excuse to stay indoors and get work done. And that makes summer all the more amazing when it does finally show up.
But you can still ski, right? Isn't there a place called Mount Baldy? No, not Mount Baldy. That's the wrong name. No, no, it's something else.
Mount Baldy, I think, is down near...
Yeah, that's in L.A.
Yeah.
What's the ski area near Seattle?
Snoqualmie and a couple other ones. I don't think people go all the way down to Mount Rainier, but maybe they do. But yeah, as before with the conversation about Notre Dame, I'm not really into the snow thing.
Yeah, I'm in Colorado, Denver, and we just live to ski. I mean, that's just the thing when you're in Denver. Yeah. Well, you know, we all have our preferences. Being on campus at Notre Dame or Christmas time can be an awesome experience.
It was beautiful. I just knew that yes. I wasn't going to make it to class if I had to go out in the snow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this looks like a really good place to take a break. When we come back, I wanted to ask you about the rest of your evolution and career at the Omni Group, which is fascinating. But right now, we're going to take a short commercial break. Folks, we'll be here and back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage, where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Kelly. That was Kelly Gamont, and I know you two are friends.
Yeah, Kelly and I actually met through App Camp for Girls.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that later, but right now I want to place you at Omni Group, and so you're a tester, and yep. You're testing Omni software, and I know what comes next, but tell me.
So I was testing our software, and you know, we had some interesting challenges coming along shortly after I started there in 2005. We made the big jump from PowerPC to Intel architecture, and that really fascinating, sneaky little corners for bugs to hide. And then not that long after that, the iPhone was released, and that was a whole nother adventure, a completely new platform to test for.
Did you enjoy the testing?
I did. I think it was always a challenge of, okay, how can I break this? How do the new tools work? We released a couple new applications, Omni Plan and then Omni Focus. And just there was a lot of new things coming along pretty regularly.
I admire people like you because I've run across other testers, and they have, my wife is a good one too. She can break anything, and I have a friend in Tucson who can break anything. And they just have a different mental process than the rest of us do. I tend to be rather conservative in my operation. And to be a tester, you have to be vastly curious and operate the software in ways that it was never intended, that you know, get to the core of some problems. And it's an amazing ability, and I admire people who can do that. I cannot. I'd like to write code. I like to write good code, but I'd rather let somebody else test it because it's just my mentality is that I wrote the code. It must be perfect. So I'm not going to test it. And I'm sure you've run into people like that. Yeah.
I think it's also fair to say that it's hard to test your own code. You are going to make the same flawed assumptions when you test it most of the time that you did while you were writing it. If you don't think about, say, landscape orientation on an iPhone while you're writing the code, you might not think to test landscape orientation on an iPhone either.
Exactly.
So I think it's important that if you've got the size of company to do it, I think it's valuable to have people whose primary job is hunting for the bugs.
Yep. Yeah, but then you didn't do that forever. You eventually started working with some internal tools management, right?
Yeah, our internal bug tracking system was getting a bit long in the tooth, and so I headed up the effort to rewrite it, modernize it, and once I'd gotten a taste of that product management role, Ken Case gave me the opportunity to be the product manager for OmniFocus for a little while.
Is that something that you were anticipating or looking forward to? Because you had, you know, started off with coding and then you were doing testing, and now Ken offers you this opportunity to become a product manager. Did that surprise you or alarm you, or were you looking forward to that?
I was definitely looking forward to it. At that point, I thought perhaps I could help us find better ways of working together in teams. And in general, I saw the way that our engineers would sometimes be slowed down by preventable things. You know, they didn't have enough information from other teams, or they were working on something they thought was important, but if we'd sat down and had a clear conversation, we would have realized that perhaps that feature shouldn't be built yet or whatever. And I really wanted to figure out whether there were ways we could save our engineers time and help them work more efficiently and productively.
So you're like the orchestra leader, setting priorities.
That's what I was hoping for.
Oh, you make it sound like it didn't get there, or am I wrong?
I think I did help the team, but I also found that there was a lot of other parts to the role. And at that point, over the last couple of years, we've revised how our product manager role works. We've learned a lot along the way, but there's a fair bit of paperwork to it.
Administrivia, yeah. I think they call it.
Yeah, submitting things to the App Store, make all the screenshots and all the localizations and all our ducks in a row. And some of that was just starting to grate on me. I don't remember even all the reasons I stepped back from product management. When I got back to full-time testing, I kind of breathed a sigh of relief and realized with testing, I was more able to have a 9-to-5 kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with product management, I was carrying the concerns of the whole team in my head all waking hours, whether I should or not.
I understand. Yeah. Well, there was something that happened next that kind of set the stage for the rest of your career. And that was when you got involved with App Camp for Girls.
Yeah, actually that happened because I was the product manager for OmniFocus. I went down to Macworld. We were having a big pre-launch event for OmniFocus. I don't know if you remember that, but we went down there and threw an event, and I was on stage demoing OmniFocus with Merlin Mann and David Sparks. And I got to talking with David Sparks that weekend about how few women there were in the room, because that tends to come up when you're at developer-related parties. And he said, "Wait, there is someone you need to meet." And he dragged me and Jean McDonald.
Yes. She's been on the show, too. She was delightful.
Yeah, so he dragged us together and said, "You need to talk." And
excellent.
Yeah, so Jean invited me to volunteer with the first beta camp of App Camp for Girls down in Portland.
Now, what were you doing at first with App Camp? Were you an instructor? What was your role?
I was Well, I was a product manager or project manager. They call, we organize the girls into teams. There's four girls on each team, and there's a team leader or project manager for each team who kind of goes through the week with the girls, coaches them through conversations about what is your team name, what is your app name.
What is the age range for these girls?
These are middle schoolers,
10,
around
11, 12.
13, 14, I think. Research shows that if you, right around high school, girls start to believe the lies that computers and science, that all those technical things are boy things and they can't do them anymore. But around 13, 14, they've got enough math, enough abstract reasoning skills that they really can start programming. And so if we can show them how cool it is to build software before they start hearing those lies, then maybe they won't fall for them.
That's right. Excellent. Excellent. Do you ever have any of the girl? Are the girls carefully selected and known to be very enthusiastic? Or do you ever have an applicant who says, oops, I realize this isn't for me? Does that ever happen?
We've definitely had a couple who start out the week with an attitude of, well, Dad said I had to be here or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think so far, every camp, they've been able to find something that interests them. They may not have any plans to write code, but they found out that they can contribute to the artwork. Or they actually, a couple of them, discover they really like testing. And sometimes they may not find anything about it that was truly their thing, and they might never be a programmer, and that's fine. At least they know a bit more what it's all about.
What would you say is the most interesting or fascinating experience about watching these young women learn to program? Is it something where the sort of a switch turns on and they say, wow, this is something I never knew about and this is so cool? Or how would you explain what's so exciting about watching these young women?
I think it's the same thing that I actually saw helping a friend learning to code this weekend. There is something just so fundamentally exciting, and I remember this from back when the iPhone was first released. There's just this super magical moment when you realize that a thing that you have created is running on a device that you can hold in your hand.
So there came a time when App Camp for Girls was an inspiration for you personally. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I was working at Omni. I had jumped back to testing, and we'd worked pretty hard at preparing OmniFocus for the watch release. And it was there on day one, and it should have been like this big, exciting for me that, you know, I got to work on this cool technology before it was released, and we were there on day one and people loved it. It was great. And I realized that, like, the challenge of getting my head around a new platform, and it was starting to be less exciting. I was getting pretty bored of the same apps on new platforms, and I really wanted to do something different. And meanwhile, at App Camp for Girls, I was cheering on other women as they went from, you know, maybe they were web developers or maybe they were just really new developers when they started helping with App Camp for Girls, and then they had the confidence to become full-time iOS developers, and they were succeeding, and that was awesome, and I was cheering for them. And hypocritically, I somehow thought I couldn't do that myself.
But you could.
Yeah. And Omni realized that I could. And so last September, it's been almost a year now, I moved down the hall from test to engineering, and now I get to write code every day.
Did you sit down with Ken and say, this is how I'm feeling? This is the inspiration that AppCamp for Girls has given me. This is what I really want to do. Will you let me do it? And Ken kind of promoted that. Is that what happened?
It actually started with my manager on the test team, Christina. Christina Sontag, she's also my co-organizer at AppCamp for Girls, and she could tell I was really burned out. And I think she actually went sort of behind my back, and in a good way, mm-hmm. and scoped out and said, hey, Ken, do you think we could give her a little more opportunity? I don't know for sure what happened there, but she's the one who said, hey, do you want to be a developer? And until she said it to me, I don't know that I really knew why I felt so stuck, but I was really fortunate to have a manager who could look beyond my success on her team and find me a better fit.
That's a very important thing I've learned in my own career and in interviewing the guests and their careers, is you have to have a really smart, warm, intelligent manager who understands you. And if you've got a manager who's fighting against you and doesn't like you, fire them. Life's too short. Move on to somebody else. So you've come full circle, and now you're coding, and this is where you will stay, I take it.
Perhaps. I feel like there's an infinite amount of new things to learn. Every year, Apple throws more things at us.
Yeah, we never know what's going to happen next. But right now, it sounds like you're happy and in a good place in your career, and how you got there is fascinating. Cool. So if you were, we've only got a few minutes left in the show, so I want to close with a question to you. So if you were talking to one of the girls in AppCamp for Girls, and she says, yeah, I think I want to make a career out of this when I grow up, you know, learn all about computers and become a developer, what advice would you give them based on your experience?
I think I would definitely encourage them to do that. I don't think there's any reason not to do that if that's what you're excited about. And I would add that perhaps the phrase, when I grow up, doesn't need to be there. If they can get their hands on a Mac, they have all the basic skills they need to get going with Xcode and build their own apps right now. They have fresh ideas mm-hmm. and enthusiasm.
Don't wait for permission. Don't wait for a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Swift is, well, it's rapidly changing, but it seems to me like Apple is think developer as they create this language. It feels to me like a much easier learning environment than Objective-C in some important ways.
I wish we could go into that more, but guess what? We are out of time.
Fair enough. Maybe we'll talk again sometime.
Oh, yeah. We have no rules against having people on the show again in the future to talk about things and follow up. So tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish to learn more and maybe chat with you or whatever.
To get in touch with me personally, I'm on Twitter at emarley, E-M-A-R-L-E-Y.
Cool. And how can dads and young girls, whoever's listening, find out more about this wonderful AppCamp for Girls?
Well, dads, moms, other adults who care about middle school girls can check out appcampforgirls.com, and that's appcamp4girls.com.
Excellent. I want to thank you very much for being on the show. This has been delightful, and it's been a wonderful story about your career evolution. And I'm really happy that you're in a great place now, and you have the group at Omni Group to thank for, and your manager for getting you there. So this is great. Again, listeners, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate you coming by and hearing Liz talk about her career and all her great experience and advice. We will see you next week on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.